WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Menace to Society is a new film set in LA's inner city. Unlike Boys in the Hood, the main character isn't a positive role model. Our film critic Stephen Schiff reviewed Menace yesterday and said it's about the axiom that for some in our culture, life is cheap. In this movie, you watch how it becomes that way. That kind of honesty may be difficult to face, but in Menace, it's presented with a vigor and bravado that I, for one, found more inspiring than 1,000 message movies. Stephen also called the film one of the most remarkable debut films in recent memory. What makes it particularly remarkable is that Menace was conceived and directed by two 21-year-old twin brothers, Alan and Albert Hughes. They were born in Detroit to an Armenian mother and African-American father. When the twins were 8, their parents separated and the boys moved with their mother to Pomona, California. I spoke with the Hughes brothers and asked them to describe the main character of their new film, Kane.
He's a criminal, definitely. He's a hustler and he's doing only what he's known throughout the years and what his environment is created, which is, you know, the kind of person he is now, which is a criminal. And I just wanted to show, we wanted to develop a character that people would sympathize with, even though he was doing criminal activities. People would go, oh, okay, I can see now how he went about doing these things because he was raised around it. And I also wanted him to have a heart, because, you know, That was key, that he just wasn't a cold-blooded, you know, criminal or killer or whatever, and because, you know, the people that live in those conditions aren't just like that.
Now, I take it that the stories of the gangsters in your film are not the stories of your lives. Are the mm-hmm. characters based on people that you know?
Yep. Several people we know. I'd say the psychology of the whole thing is, or the mental aspect of the script is more us. I'm not going to say we lived that lifestyle, though.
You're saying you did live the lifestyle?
No, we didn't live that lifestyle. We live a couple of houses down from that lifestyle. We just didn't live that lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, so you say the characters are based on people who you know, people who you know well, or people who you found out about for the purposes of writing the movie?
Go ahead.
Yeah, it was people that we have a good set of, like, 3 or 4 friends, and it's their friends, you know. We go through them. And then there was one guy that we got a lot of information from, who was our technical advisor, who was more, we dealt with him on a one-on-one basis, so we really knew him well.
Yeah, there was a lot of people that we were growing up with that I wouldn't call them friends. They're acquaintances, though. If you see them, you say, what's up?
Right.
You don't hold your conversation too long with them.
What interested you in the kind of gangster who you made the film about? I mean, the people who were the friends of friends, but who, you wouldn't be talking with very long.
Because what interested us initially was that, you know, we'd seen movies for, you know, the past 5 years in Hollywood about, say, the black gang members, you know, whatever. And the movies always centered around the good characters and how they made it out of the ghetto and everything like that. And good characters, to me and my brother, are just boring. There's nothing all that interesting about good characters because we're good characters. So we want to explore the criminal mind. And the criminals and bad guys in movies have always been the one that bring the audiences in and always been the one that keep people on the edge of their seats and wondering how they got that way. And mostly films in the past, you know, have not dealt with how they got that way, but mostly what they're doing now.
Yeah.
And what we wanted to do is show them how they got that way, what they're doing now, and how, you know, the crimes they're doing and what they think about after that crime. And we thought that would be interesting.
And how it affects everyone around them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just more of you can absorb more from a film totally about a hustler or a criminal than just one about good guys and there's one little bad guy there and you don't know much about him.
My guests are Alan and Albert Hughes, directors of the new film Menace to Society. We're after this break. This is Fresh Air. Alan and Albert Hughes are my guests, director of Menace to Society. Now, I read that you spent a couple of years following the lives of a few drug dealers and gang members. Were these the friends of friends or were these other people who you found just for research?
Just people we knew. These mm-hmm. aren't even, like, friends of friends. I know a lot of firsthand dope dealers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I wouldn't say that we were following them in cars and, like, investigating them, but we were definitely, you know, whenever they came, we just paid close attention to the way they talked, the way they walked, what they did, how many times a pager went off, you know.
What was your reaction to their lives when they did things that were violent? I mean, I don't know if any of them, mm-hmm. you know, killed, like the characters in your movies
they do.
Yeah. So were you horrified at that, or were you just interested, or what?
I think the funny, we grew up with a guy in our neighborhood that, you know, he used to bully us a little bit, and we were friends, and we were bullied, we were friends, you know, by him. And then recently he just became like single-handedly wiping off whole gang sets and selling dope too, you know. He'd been murdering people. And we and my friends, we sit back and almost, it's like a nervous laugh. You laugh like at what he's doing. And it's funny to us that, you know, what he's become. We knew a murderer, you know, and what he's doing now, selling dope and killing people, is it's almost like in the movies. You don't believe that you would know somebody like that, but it goes on day to day.
Why doesn't it horrify you?
Because if you get horrified by it, you're gonna live your life in fear. So we chose to laugh sarcastically at it.
Yeah, a lot of things that happen that in the ghetto and, you know, in different places. Like if you see an audience, what I'm getting at is, if you see an audience, a black audience see our movie, and then a white audience see our movie, they'll react in two different ways. Black people are more apt to laugh at the certain things about the violence, whereas white people are more horrified and shocked about it. You know, we're the same way about it. If we see something that violent happen or something like that, we might be appalled by it, but at the same time, there's something always a little funny about it. You know, as weird as it sounds, it's like it's like a way of telling yourself not to fear so much because you're around it. You know what I'm saying? It's not it's like a safety for you mentally.
Well, I'll tell you what happened when I saw the movie. I saw the movie at Philadelphia Theater. It was, I guess, the house is about half filled. And it was mostly, exclusively, except for me and my friend, I think, black teenagers. I think we were the only white people there, and we were certainly by far the oldest people there. And what I found was that some of the scenes that really kind of horrified me, I mean, I thought they were great scenes, but I mean, you know, the action is kind of horrifying. That's where everybody applauded. Like in the opening scene, I hope you don't mind my giving this away.
No, everybody has.
Okay, so in the opening scene, O-Dog, the kind of really crazy character in the film, the most violent character in the film, kills two Korean shop owners because he thinks that the shop owners are giving him a hard time and are kind of like watching him too carefully. So he just kind of knocks them off. And the audience started to applaud.
Yeah, well,
And then there's another scene, I won't give too much away here, but a woman who is pregnant calls the guy who's the father, and he tells her basically to get lost. Yeah. And the audience starts applauding. And then some of the young women in the audience started yelling at, started hissing some of the men who were applauding. But I was really kind of appalled at the reaction, actually.
We didn't originally intend on getting some of those reactions, and if you were to see it in L.A., you would see that it was probably magnified 10 times over because the Korean and black relations are pretty messed up over here. But we had a test audience of 500 black kids. They were the first to see the film ever. And then New Line was sitting in the back of the theater, and then the opening scene came up, and all of a sudden they started cheering and hooting and hollering and applauding the death of those two Korean people. And I was totally taken aback, but I didn't expect it at all. And nor did I intend on getting that reaction out of the crowd, but I saw what they saw at the end of the film. It was that they were relieving their tensions, frustrations were getting relieved through this film because they had no other source of relieving it. They couldn't talk to the media. The media wouldn't voice their opinion. Nothing they can channel this energy through would listen to these kids. So finally, they had a movie that felt the way they felt, and they went ahead and applauded it. I guess that's mine.
Well, okay. I don't know. Does the movie feel the way they did? I mean, did you want people to applaud the murder of the Koreans?
No, I'm not going to say that.
I never said that.
The way that she took it. But we did a scene, and we said, let's deal with this issue, and let's not go too far, because halfway through the movie, that issue is dropped. But I was more wanting to deal with the culture gap and the miscommunication than anything.
Right. See, that's what I thought the scene was about. How the two teenagers are misinterpreting the Koreans, and the Koreans are misreading them.
No, we weren't trying to. We definitely were not trying to get somebody's kids to cheer at that scene, because happened, it scared me. It scared me when I heard that.
The main character in the movie is asked by his grandfather whether he cares if he lives or dies. You know, whether this main character cares if he lives or dies. And he says, I don't know. What gave you the idea of asking that question?
The kids were, I guess that tells you right there, and that point in the film where his head's at, and you know how he feels about life, and you know it was so significant because by the end of the film, when he said, "Now, yeah, I do," but now it's you know whatever. I'm not gonna give that away. Also,
everybody knows.
Come on.
No, basically every reporter across the nation gave away a movie.
I know, but this is radio. You don't like give that away.
You don't need to give anything away about the end and that.
They're mowed down.
Watching your movie, I really was thinking this movie was made by people who truly love movies.
Yeah.
I think there's a real passion for film in it. So I'm interested in hearing some about your story, about how you started making movies. And what I've read is that your mother gave you a video camera when you were 11, both of you?
Yeah, 12.
Yeah? 12?
Yeah.
So what did you do with the camera at first? What kinds of things did you make?
We just did remakes of Star Trek, Scarface, Bruce Lee films.
Star Trek.
Yeah.
Tonight Show.
We did all kinds of things, little skits and everything like that. But mostly we made little movies. The Terminator Part 2, 7 years before that was made. We just went on to just to keep making movies. And then as our mother bought us more equipment like lights and VCRs, we got to edit and learn how to do sound. And by the time I was in high school, we got to a local cable access show. I mean, a station, and that's what we had our own show on that local cable access station. So, Albert went to film school. That's like the short story.
Right.
Very short.
Now, you're 21 now, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you have any trouble getting people to trust you being that young with such a big budget and with so much responsibility?
Well, let's just say they distrusted us behind their back.
Yeah, there's a lot of that behind our back.
Yeah, but in our face, you can just see their eyes bulging out, wanting to tell us how much they didn't trust us, but they wouldn't say it. Yeah, but they kept their mouth shut, and now you hear everybody going, "I knew all along."
Yeah, it's weird that everybody that we work with, I mean, a lot of people that we've even worked with on the film, you know, they go on getting congratulated at different areas, and they go up and speak, and, "Oh, we knew the vision all the way through," and then, you know, we heard things the whole way through the film. These people are bad-mouthing the film, they're bad-mouthing us. You know, talking this and that, this film would never be nothing. And then basically me and our brother going home thinking the film's going to be nothing because everybody's telling us it ain't going to be nothing. And then we get critical, you know, praise for the film, which we never expected. And these people are up here going, "Oh, we knew all along." You know, it's like these backstabber people, you know.
I want to get back to something we were talking about early on. I had asked you about gangster friends who were the models for some of the characters in your movie. And you had mentioned that you knew that they'd killed people, but that you weren't horrified by that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still kind of thinking that through, that you know, to know people who kill people and to not be horrified by it.
Especially when you know those people aren't in jail right next to you.
Yeah, well, right. And I don't mean necessarily scared that they're going to hurt you, but just horrified that these are people who can casually take a life and not feel bad about it.
You look at somebody like Old Dog in the movie.
Yeah.
And if he was sitting next to you in the theater, you would never even think, would you?
You'd probably think he was a little attractive little kid, but.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you'd think he's living the lifestyle, but you know, the kid was, you know, pretty, you know, he's pretty entertaining when he wasn't killing nobody.
Right.
Even when he was killing people, he was trying to entertain.
So, I don't know. I don't, it's not horrifying to me because it's all too real down there when people.
Maybe I'm using the wrong word, horrifying. But how do you feel about the people who do that? And I'm wondering if you feel comfortable letting it show how you feel. Do you know what I mean?
The people that I don't feel nothing. As long as we keep proper distance, it's like handling snakes. You know, as long as you walk a fine line, don't mess with that snake, he ain't gonna bite you. Yeah. And you know, whatever he does in his off time is.
You might be really, very, really intrigued by them, just like snakes too. A lot of people are really like to look at them and want to know about them, but they're really scared because they look slimy, you know.
Yeah, I'm just.
But okay, even if he doesn't bite you, if he's biting other people, that doesn't get
you.
You
know, hey, cops bite a lot of people every day, so we don't. I'm not tripping up them.
Yeah, I mean, when things like that happen, I guess if you get too deep into it,
yeah,
into thinking about it, it will scare you. And the way I choose to do it, that's the life. He's choosing to live, and the people he's taking that out on are also living that life.
Yeah, a lot of times, not in the case of Old Dog, but in the case of a lot of these people we interviewed, the people that they're killing 90% of them are people like them. So it's like, it's almost like the Italian mafia thing. It's like those mobsters never really mess with people in the neighborhood. So the neighborhood's not really scared of them killing them. It's more like they target people like themselves. So yeah. There's not really anything to fear. It's really upfront. They know who they're killing.
Like, but it is a disgusting thing. But it has a lot to do with the government and the way things are set up. So I'm more disgusted in the government than the individual doing it.
One last question: Do you know if any of the people who you base the characters on actually saw the movie?
Yeah, they did.
A lot of them.
Reactions?
They like it.
I asked one guy. I go, what'd you think? And he goes, man, it was cool. I go, man, you liked it very much. He goes, no, it was a good movie. I go, well, what's up? He goes, it was violent. It's very violent.
And this is the same guy that shot a couple Koreans in his own little lifetime.
And I'm like, oh, so you think it's violent? He's like, yeah, but it's real. It's real. So, you know, whatever. Okay. I don't want to make it seem like I'm rubbing shoulders with you guys. What you think of violence, guy? No. That was just, I guess that was more valuable to me than Siskel and Ebert, though. Although I did appreciate that those comments.
Well, I want to thank you both a lot for talking with us.
Oh, thanks a lot. Also.
The Hughes brothers directed Menace to Society. This is Fresh Air.